In order to get to the point where I turned things around, I got to a really, really dark place. I got to a point where I was praying for a terminal illness.
Wow.
And my goodness, yeah, wow. I've done so much work energetically to undo that, wow. to redress that balance. I'd considered suicide. I didn't want to leave that mess for my loved ones.
Mm.
And in the end, I struck this crazy deal with whoever was listening that I would go out every day and take as many risks as I could. And if I was alive at the end of the day, someone wanted me to be here. And ultimately, yeah,
Wow.
it took me crashing my car. I broke my back in three places. And I remember, three places. And I remember lying on a flatbed in a hospital with my head packed in sandbags. And I lay there for 9 hours with nobody really telling me what was going on until I heard the word spinal damage. And this might sound really cliched, guys, but it was in that moment that I went from hopeless to hopeful. Something switched for me in that moment. And I went from thinking that
with a big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Well, it's become very apparent by now that they are dropping like flies, more or less. I mean, there isn't a day that doesn't go by, or a day part that doesn't go by. We don't hear about some other, some sexual allegation, sexual abuse, sexual harassment, some sort of accusation against somebody well-known, somebody you may have known. It's happened in all circles, happened in entertainment circles, political circles, leaders of all kind. Anybody who is, well, I think the common denominator for me is someone that's in a powerful position. It tends to be somebody that's, and it's not just, by the way, as you, most of them are men against ladies, but it's not just that. These are pretty serious claims. The latest one to come out in the last day or so, Charlie Rose, CBS News anchor, well known. He's on multiple networks. And I want to read you this as we start this serious program here. The advances, it says in the Washington Post, included lewd phone calls, walking around naked in their presence, or groping their breasts, buttocks, or genital areas. These were the responses from the women. And these are, by the way, just employees or former employees or future employees of CBS News. Wow. The allegations are tremendous. Now, he has come out and he has apologized. He's admitted that he's had some problems. And when put to the test just recently, put on the spot, he says, they asked him if he was okay. And he says, no, I am not okay. Well, no kidding. He should have thought of that before he did the problem. Don't you think, friends?
Mm.
Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, Season 2. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. This story has been, it really has been a runaway train. And as a news guy myself, I see it come on my newswire all the time, on my phones and apparatus, that there's another person being held, that's being held accountable finally. Now, some of these allegations go back 10, 20, 30. Some are more recent in the past 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Others go back, they can go back 10, 20, 30 years even. And then you wonder, why all of a sudden are the women coming out in these segments? And then again, I mention Kevin Spacey there, the guy who did the House of Cards show, which I've never really seen that show or don't know a lot about him because I don't watch a lot of that television stuff. He's also had a lot of claims from young men. As he came out, and he admitted, he released the fact that the media got a little upset with him because it was tied into the fact that he announced to the public that he was a gay man, that nobody ever knew, that somehow we had to know that, and he failed to tell anybody that. And in the meantime, he spent, of course, everyone on the set knew that because he'd been chasing the young boys around for some time and doing things that weren't really proper. Our co-host today on the show, joining us, Jennifer Breeden. She's an attorney with specializing in international law, criminal law, and U.S. foreign policy. She's an expert in Middle East affairs and counterterrorism. Jenna Smith, a psychotherapist. She's a coach, a human being expert, we call her. She's the creator of You Are the Manual self-development program. Taz Thornton is also our co-host today. She's a best-selling author, UK's number one inspirational breakthrough speaker. So we have a great panel here to discuss this topic. And ladies, I want to start with this, and I want to go right to Taz Thornton. And I want to ask you, Taz, this. As we see these allegations and a lot of these claims coming out, and sometimes you see them going back, you know, 10 years, 20 years, more, sometimes more than that even. And I have people around me saying, well, I don't know, should we believe that? Why all of a sudden did they come out? Why didn't they report that 20, 30 years ago? So what is, that's a big question, I know, but let's start right there. Why is it that somebody now is empowered to come out with their story about somebody famous that has done something less than spectacular against them?
Well, you know, we had similar things going on over here in the UK not too long back, and a lot of the people under the microscope, under the spotlight, were family entertainers, even children's entertainers, and it was a similar kind of thing happening. Once one came out, then there was this snowball effect. And why do people speak out? Well, I guess it only takes one, doesn't it? It just takes one to give somebody else the courage to be able to say, well, hey, this happened to me as well. So this is where we get this awful grey area again, though, isn't it? Because as you've just pointed out, Malcolm, there are going to be some people out there saying, well, they could be making it up. And what an awful thing to even consider in the first place. But where do we draw the line? And
You mean if some people were indeed making it up, like that's not really, you're saying somebody would have to be out of their mind to do that, unless there was some financial gain for it or some reason, Taz, no?
Well, somebody with my worldview and right, kind of a moralistic attitude similar to mine would have to be out of their mind, but not everybody operates in the same way. So it's a really difficult one, because of course there is the possibility that people could be fabricating, embroidering a little bit, but let's not get away from the fact that finally people are finding the courage to be able to speak out about these things. And surely the big picture is, hello, there's a massive entertainment industry here, and some people somewhere in the know must have known this was going on and have been keeping it quiet for a very long time. That, for me, is the scariest part.
Well, that's a great point, and that's the human nature part of this we do need to explore. And we'll do that in a moment with Jenna Smith, who maybe can shed a little more light on that as a psychotherapist. But I do find that alarming as well, Taz, in the fact that where were all these people when it was clearly things going on? And you know what, Taz? I think a lot of it was like back to, like, you think a lot of those comic shows and the comedy shows back in the 80s and 90s and into the, you know, you know, I mean, they were grabbing their ass on and their breast on television, Taz. I mean, like, that was like
absolutely
part of the, right? Come on.
Well, it's like the Carry On movies over here. Hey. It's that kind of humor. But people use that kind of as an excuse, weren't they? Well, it was the time. Up to a point, but.
Well, but this is the whole problem. My point is with the whole entertainment field. You know, I just find them all a bunch of damn hypocrites, ladies. I'll have to tell you. I mean, these people get on their soapbox every other day. Well, you can't do this, you can't do that, do this. And these people, then they make the biggest films and television shows and series and things with, you know, AK-47s and guns and explosives and people dying and mayhem, murder and rape and sexual abuse. And whether some of it's comedy, some of it's not comedy, but it's all stupid, if you ask me. I think the entertainment around the world, and certainly far beyond this country and your country as well, Taz, in the UK, is turned into a bunch of rubbish.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's really what it is. Jennifer, let's pick it up there with you. And, you know, you hear where I'm sort of going. I mean, but I do find there's this double standard with a lot of these, the entertainment industry as a whole. And let me just say, I'm not just picking on entertainment here, because, Jennifer, the people that are coming out here every day, every other day, are far more than just entertainers. I mean, these are serious news people. They are political leaders. I mean, look at what's happened to the political leaders and Al Franken. That more claims are coming out with him in the last 24, 48 hours with some pretty gross stuff. Of course, he's gross anyways. But go ahead, Jennifer, on that point.
Okay, let's go ahead on Al Franken's grossness. No, I mean, it all is gross. And, you know, there's a twofold thing here. So when you're talking about the entertainment industry, I think the sickest thing is the parents here, because a lot of these kids were child actors. And so I'm sure they went home immediately and told their mom and dad, and their mom and dad said, okay, you know, you have Kevin Spacey or whomever that's this big actor or big actress, or mostly big actors in these cases, or Harvey Weinstein, who's a big director. This is the guy that'll get them. And these parents become so obsessed with wanting to make their kids celebrities that they probably were the first ones to say, do not say anything. Maybe we can sign some sort of non-disclosure. We'll get money.
That's insidious.
So you think it's being overlooked, Jennifer? Wow.
Of course it's being overlooked because, I mean, you know, it depends on that. You know, these are kids that are very young. They probably went home and told their mommy and daddy. And that was the first thing was probably, okay, this is just what happens here. You're going to be a star. Let's watch these movies. The second thing, we get to politics. And I mean, it's the same thing. You know, we talked about this. And I think, you know, obviously I can only speak for the U.S., but I mean, we have one of the most abysmal rates of women in politics. Mm-hmm. And so anybody in a political realm or even a media realm that discusses politics, like Charlie Rose and elsewhere, they have this influence over women, and it's the same kind of thing. Whereas if you have somebody like Al Franken, who's high up, and you're not caught up in the Washington, D.C. muckety muck of whiskey and cigars late at night, and he's offering you a job or can do whatever he wants, you're not going to say anything, because the moment you speak out against somebody that's in Congress, that's on Capitol Hill, no matter what political party, you're going to be chastised and looked at as some complaining woman, and you're not going to get this, you know, job in politics in a country where less than, you know, 15% of the women in politics, or 15% of the people in politics, are women.
Right.
So this is all a desperation for women to try and get ahead. Now, that being said, it is difficult. You know, it's difficult to come out to say something, you know, so these people have been quiet. But to Taz's point, I totally agree. Sometimes it just takes one person to deny a non-disclosure agreement, to deny a financial payment from the perpetrator or whomever to do this. But a lot of it starts with, you know, rape laws alone in the United States. I mean, my goodness, to go to accuse somebody of rape in the United States, some of the worst laws against victims are if you accuse somebody of rape, because you really, under U.S. federal laws, have to face your rapist. And yes, not all of these people that have accused somebody of rape are, you know, are telling the 100% truth. Sometimes people's reputations are hurt. But at the same time, if these are real victims, they're having to face their accusers, and their sexual history, their entire sexual history, has to go on.
It's embarrassing, Jennifer, is what you're saying. And quite frankly, from what I've seen from reports, Jennifer, some of these victims would say, and some of the systems and laws is what you're suggesting, you almost have to be caught in the act and drag the perpetrator into the court right while he's doing it.
Exactly.
I mean, how sick is that?
Exactly. And you have to be willing, no matter what it is, whether it's a rape accusation or even just sexual harassment or allegations like that, you have to be willing for your entire sexual history to go into public eye. And that's what it would come down to, because, you know, the minute you say something as a woman in a male dominated field, it's going to come out. Well, she slept with this person, and this person. Right. So who's really telling the truth?
Right. Right. And there's a difference between, you're so right with that. I mean, and you see that a lot, how it's turned, the tables are turned against somebody. In fact, quite frankly, in a court of law, that's just normal business. You know that as an attorney, Jennifer. You know, that's just normal business in a court of law. You use whatever you can to get your client off, or whatever it is. I mean, come on. So it really gets a little dicey here. Jenna, speaking to the point that was just brought up about, which Jennifer, like, rattled me with that one, but all right, so I can see, like, little Johnny Q from the set being sexually harassed from Kevin Spacey as a young boy, maybe about 12, 13 years old, as some of these claims have been. Maybe he's 14, 15, I don't know. And he goes home to mom and dad, and he says, you know, you don't believe what Kevin Spacey, and, you know, mom and dad somehow overlooked the problem. I mean, that really happens, I guess, huh, you think?
Absolutely. I mean, no one wants to admit that it's true. So one, the parents admitting that it's true would require them to deal with some pretty heavy emotions and responsibility that, quite frankly, a lot of people don't have. We don't build a lot of emotional chops and the confidence to speak up against powerful people. So we're looking at a deep-rooted societal problem of abuse of power, and our modern-day celebrities are our gods of our time. So, you know, that requires a lot of an individual to speak up, a lot. I mean, yes, it's the right thing, but what are the costs? What are the costs of speaking up, and can I deal with that? I can maybe just be silent and move on, and like, well, what should I do if I speak up? Because, as you were saying, Jennifer, the culture is terrible. So, you know, now that more people are speaking up, they're getting a voice, that's going to happen more because they're getting a voice and it's being heard and it's being validated. Social media has been brilliant for this because the legal system has been so terrible with actually supporting victims and supporting people having a voice. So I would say absolutely the parents would want to deny it, not because they don't love their child, but I think because of an emotional inability to deal with the severity of such things.
Hmm. Wow. You think it's more that, Jenna, than where Jennifer was saying, like, because you're going to be a star, so just suck it up and deal with it?
It could be both.
Yeah, you better believe it.
The insecure, poor poverty. Oh, well, this is just what we got to do. And you think of the slave times and the amount of sexual abuse of those times. You just had no voice. You know, like, it's just not even an option. So when you think of poverty, how different is that than feeling that disempowerment of that type of slave-like thing? Oh, well, they're more powerful than me. Don't speak up. Don't speak up. It's just woven through our culture. So I think some are genuinely narcissistic. All right, you go out there, cash cow, and make my money. You know, that's abhorrent, but it's true. And then there's a bunch of just people trying to get by.
Okay. Jenna, I've been thinking a lot about this crisis because I have reported on it and talked about it on national radio a lot as a commentator. And because this is in the news every day, as I say, you can't escape this problem. You just simply cannot escape it, even if you don't want to talk about it. And I don't, because it gets old. But it's all about awareness and bringing awareness to the public at large to really understand what's going on. But you just hit it head on to me, Jenna. And when you said, here's what I think, Taz, Jennifer, listen here now, please. To me, I've given this a lot of thought, and Jenna Smith kind of just hit what I believe is really the core of all of this when she said it's a deep-rooted societal problem.
Mm-hmm.
See, four words. I just wrote those down because that, to me, is the whole nail on this thing. In other words, this just didn't start yesterday is what I'm saying. You understand?
No.
And this has been going on. But then I questioned myself, why? Why do human beings engage in these kinds of things? Let me explain to you. I'm not just talking about the act of sex here. I'm not just talking about having, you know, sexual relations with somebody. I'm talking about the fact that you have sexually raped somebody or abused somebody in a severe way. Yeah? You know,
let's be clear here.
This
is about sex. Yeah. This is about abuse, not about sex.
It's about power.
And then it's about power. Yeah, it's power.
Yes. Exactly.
It's got nothing to do with sex, but sex is the means they use to get there. But what I'm saying, I've tried to think through it as a man myself to say, well, why would anybody, because most of these perpetrators are men. Let's be real here, ladies. They're almost all men. I mean, I'm sure there are some women who do it, but they're so far and few in between. It doesn't come to my mind, but it's men. Do we all agree with that?
Yeah, it's a patriarchal society. I mean, so there is this permission. Titled narcissistic web that's actually been, you know, it's like, oh, did you see that secretary? Ha ha ha, la la la. Like it's a conversation that isn't questioned. And
well,
now
it's talking at the water cooler, but talking at the water cooler is different than going around the corner and sexually abusing her.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, too, we're talking, if you're bringing up the water cooler, you know, I love these points that are being made because I mean, I, for one, and I'm sure the other women here, too, have worked in some kind of corporate field, or if you ever have, and you see where that starts. It first starts with putting women down because, oh, you're just going to be more emotional. So we can't have that too much passion because women are more emotional. So as soon as you do that, you then take who is now an equal with the other men in the office and you put them below everybody else. You then put them down a few steps because their emotions, you know, our emotions are invalidated. We're looked at as being somebody who might be too emotional, so we can't be trusted with our words. You know, there was actually a funny article that came out, and it's a whole joke. It's a satirical article. I think it was passed around on social media about how women and men have to say things differently in the office because it won't be listened to, or they'll just be considered, you know, some heinous bitch or whatever. And so, and it was funny, but at the sad sense, it was true because I've seen that myself. I'm sure these other women have. And so as soon as that, you're putting women on a different playing field. And then when sexual abuse or allegations or harassment come into the picture, we've already been lessened a couple levels down as, okay, be nice to her, be gentle to her, make sure she says things in an appropriate manner.
Yeah, there's something, though, that is lost in all of this when you talk about a deep-rooted societal problem, and it's just mutual respect.
There's a lack of mutual respect out there for everybody. I mean, men against men, men against women, women against men. Mm-hmm. I've got a point to that I want to make here in just a moment here. But I think I really was hoping on this show and this production today we'd get down to more of the core problem. And it seems to me like we're sort of headed there already, which is a beautiful thing when we talk about why is this really going on. I mean, it's one thing we're seeing it, as I say, every day. And you can look at these individual cases. They're all over the place. As I say, it's massive. This is, we're having a cultural shift right now. It's a phenomenon, what's happening right now in the public sphere. It's a phenomenon, what's developed right now. And it's a game changer to me. It's a game changer in the way that if we really take this in, and responsible people everywhere understand what's really going on, you know, maybe we can start to re-educate some of the new generation and some of the kids out there of what is acceptable and not acceptable. And I'll take one step further, friends, as we pause here a moment and just think about this. Maybe, just maybe, we can get some of the entertainment folks to consider what they put on the big screen and the little screen for that matter to make sure that, you know, what you put out there is you're impacting people's minds. It's like a lot of these shows that people enjoy watching where they murder and they rape and mayhem and drag you into the aisle and they show all the graphic details. That I find that stuff so disgusting on every level. I said,
Well, I love what Jenna was saying about how the celebrities are kind of our gods. We look up to them now. We have such a celebrity-centric culture all over the world now.
Right.
And I think, you know, on some level, where does it come down to when you want so badly to just be noticed, to be seen by the world? And if you have to, you know, put up with a little bit of sexual abuse or harassment to get there, when did that become more important than speaking out for your rights?
Well, that's
because
another big problem.
I have met with women there.
That's another big problem, you're saying, where we've created a culture, Jennifer, where we've trained the kids that they want to be like everybody else, that they, instead of being their own individual, unique person, which, you know, you can only be yourself. But I feel sorry for people who live their life and grow up where they just want to be like somebody else, or some star, as you say, or somebody that's famous, or I want to be like that person. And that really is a sad moment for me when people say that, and you hear these young kids say that. They shouldn't want to be like anybody else. They should want to be their own unique person and self. We're going to pick it up right there, friends, on the other side of this pause. We'll be right back with you.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Hey, welcome back. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, Season 2, friends. A serious topic today. Sexual harassment and sexual abuse, and really we're talking in the bigger picture of society here, and it's a major story. I mean, you can't miss this on the news and some of the more recent ones you're seeing. You know, in fact, I didn't say this in the first segment, and I wanted to say to all of you here, something happened. Something happened and changed with Harvey Weinstein. I call this the Harvey Weinstein effect, you know, the impact of, because it was a Weinstein revolution. It almost changed everything. Somehow it empowered people to have permission to be able to come out in the public and say, you know what, this guy did this to me. Even if it happened 10, 20, 30 years ago, people are doing that. And there, what is it that happened with Harvey? Jenna, let's take it right back with you and tell me, what do you see that happened? Because that's really was the turning point, I think, is Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. It was so big, so profound, so explosive that all of a sudden it gave everybody permission to bring the truth out. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think that's it. And as I said before, social media is allowing non-traditional media to cover being heard. It's allowing people to have a voice. And then you get all of those people, hashtag handles, to speak up. And then you see this overwhelming evidence that, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. I have, and now it's being covered by regular media, and now it's being a new conversation. So yeah, you know, it's all of that. And, you know, you look at Bill Cosby, and that was a big hit. I mean, hello, what a safe character in our celebrity culture. And then, you know, to hear these stories of allegations. So this isn't new, but the ability to speak up is definitely growing, which is beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, well, it is. And it's also sad because it's a sad reflection of reality of what you said early on, a deep-rooted societal problem, Jenna, you know?
I mean, it's been there. You know, the same thing as male molestation within families has been such a secret thing, but the statistics of male molestation are almost as high as female
Jenna,
molestation.
Jenna, do this for me,
stuff
Jenna.
People don't want to look at.
Jenna, yeah. do this for me. Help me understand. Now, and then let's have Taz and Jennifer size this up and tell me they agree, disagree, or have another point of view. But tell me, what is it in one's mind that gives them, one of these guys, that gives them the thought or the permission that they can, well, sexually abuse somebody at a minimum or rape them at a maximum or severely hurt them? Obviously, they're going to be traumatized for life, a lot of these people, I'm assuming. But what gives another human being, what is it in their mindset, Jenna? Have you ever looked at that as a psychotherapist to say, okay, I mean, these can't be normal people.
Absolutely.
This can't be normal, Jenna. Come on.
Well, it's unfortunately it is, but it isn't healthy. It's really narcissism and the abuse of power in these areas. Ego, I am more important than you. I want what I want when I want it. That's it. I'm more important than you. I want this, and it's so pernicious. It's like addictions. It's like all of these things that are coming to surface of, again, deep-rooted societal problems. We're sick as a society, and these are the symptoms. These are how people are acting when they think that they can. So they do. And so they need just as much help. Here's the thing, you know, from a societal perspective,
kick in the ass is what they need.
Well, perhaps my boyfriend would agree with you. He's all for beating up men that are behaving badly. I'm like, no.
Well, let me go further. Know. Hold on, Jenna. Let me go further with that, please, before we get to answer.
Sure.
Let me hold on a second here. As a man myself, if you go ahead and do the kinds of things we're talking about and you're rape or what have you, quite frankly, I would like to see some sort of castration going on. I would like to see the courts, absolutely, 100% lutely, we cut their penises off or something. I don't care what you do. Give them a bag for the rest of their life.
But Malcolm, if this is about power and not actually about sex, all you're going to do is create a bigger problem with that, surely.
Yeah. Wow.
It's more violence. It's again, that's normal to feel that way.
So you're saying Taz, they'll use something else to get back at you, mean, or something
else,
huh?
Well, of course, if it's about, I mean... Again, without going way back into my past, as somebody who's been through an abusive relationship that included sexual abuse and emotional manipulation, the first point is actually getting them to the point where they recognize that there is something wrong with the behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to go into any naming and shaming here, and I don't wish the person I was in the relationship with any ill whatsoever. I just hope that whatever's going on now, they're not still doing the same thing. But I can look at the stuff that was going on there and trace that right back down through some of the experiences they'd had as a child. And so much of it was really warped into, on some level, the perpetrator of my abuse felt that somebody in their family line would be proud of them if they knew this was going on. And of course, it was never going to be discussed.
Wow.
But somewhere, some of those wires didn't connect. And at some level, they were trying to find validity through what they were doing. I'm sure of that. And it's not about sex. It's about this is the norm. It's about this is what I need to survive. It's about this is how I plant my feet in the world and get through every day. So, you know, chopping their bits off isn't going to do anything at all. It's
just going to manifest
in another way.
I just say, Malcolm, your objective with this is to elevate humanity, and that's what's needed. Because we all need to elevate humanity. We're acting in animalistic ways, dehumanizing ways to meet our basic human needs, right? That's sexual needs. So the problem isn't the act, it's elevation. People need to, as you said, be made aware, and then be given other options as well of expressing this deep, dark humanity that's in them and their stigma and their sexual
shame. All right, but Jenna, how do we elevate humanity? What do we do back to the perpetrator? I mean, how do we elevate? Do you have an answer for that? I mean, that's a hell of a statement.
I would say they need to be humbled. I mean, for the most case, a lot of these men are being humbled in being called out. I think financial is a great way to punish them.
I see.
Because you will get very humbled when you don't have all this money to wear the power suit and to do what you want with what you will. Mm-hmm. That will humble them. I would say more of a financial thing than a violent thing, because they'll just act out in an animalistic vindictive way back. You're just perpetuating the cycle. So I would say humbling people of abuse of power and calling them out is absolutely the first place, and that's what's happening.
Yeah. In the one way, yeah, but then you've also got to look at the root of this, and of course you've got that whole issue of the abused becoming the abusers as well. Sometimes it's just learned patterns, and in some cases, humbling them may not work either. I mean, something needs to happen. It's not necessarily about that. Sometimes they need help. Sometimes it's the people who we're seeing as the perpetrators actually need help themselves in some way.
Absolutely.
It's not about waggling your finger and saying you're wrong. It's about what's needed, and that's where we're not getting to what's needed.
Let's do this. Jennifer, now here's a great, let's turn this conversation a little bit. You know what I was just thinking of now? You have massive, major experience with dealing with women throughout the Middle East as an international attorney and as someone that understands the culture shift over the year and working with folks over the year, a lot of the women. And these are parts of the world that haven't always cherished women. Many of them still don't. In fact, just in recent weeks, Saudi Arabia, for the first time in their history, allowed women to drive an automobile, which is hard to fathom today. They can't vote. They have to walk behind men. I mean, you talk about, an inferior complex of life. Tell us, how does that relate to the conversation we're happening with women around the globe that you've seen, Jennifer?
Well, it relates in the sense that, you know, what we're talking about right now, how these victims are feeling, or the women in general are raised to feel either they're tricked, and this is the main thing I've seen, is that they're tricked and they are fashioned, or they're made to think that at a very young age that it's actually empowering to allow yourself to live this way. It's empowering to not drive. It's empowering to cover yourself. It's empowering to need a male guardian, to not be able to speak to people. That's empowering. It's empowering as a woman because you don't need to flaunt yourself. And so they're actually tricked into thinking that they are empowering themselves to not do this, kind of switching gears to some of the Yazidi girls. I was privileged to meet with them this last most recent trip in Iraq. Some of these Yazidi victims were these sex slaves we've heard about.
Right.
And but in terms of this, just the sexual abuse, you know, you don't see, like we would assume that upon meeting these girls, you see this complete and utter trauma, inability to talk. But to a lot of them, it comes from a lack of education, a lack of self-awareness, and a lack of knowing. And so they really, the most of them were raised in these rural mountain villages as farmers, never went to school, don't understand education, and actually thought that's just what they had to do. I mean, ISIS, you know, the first people to kidnap them before they started selling them around, didn't even really have to do much or threaten them to take them. It was just like, well, they came, and so this is just what we do. We just go if we're called, and that's what we have to do. And so it's the inability to think you have a choice. And I think it relates because if you go back to some of I can more speak to women in politics rather than in the celebrity culture. But if you think that, you know, you're never going to be part of the good old boys DC club, I'm just speaking about the US because that's what I know, the good old boys, you know, political club. And the only way you can get by, you know, hey, we'll give you a position on this, you know, congressional panel on something, but, you know, maybe come out with us later, or let me, you know, whip my stuff out or take my clothes off or do something like that. And that's the only way that you can get this, rather than years and years of infiltrating that, you know, deep knit male dominated circle, that you don't have a choice.
Well, because Jennifer, in the circles you're speaking about there, I mean, the men run the program. I mean, the women are mm-hmm. third class citizens at best. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same thing. You know, it's very similar in the Middle East. But that's the thing, is that they're fashioned to think that, you know, this is just right. what you have to do. This is just society and its culture. And actually in Saudi Arabia, when I went there, mm-hmm. it was fascinating because one of the largest female universities I've ever seen, it was, I believe, made by one of the queens there. Mm-hmm. One of the princesses wanted to build this school. One of the largest female universities is sitting right there in Riyadh. And I think as that university has now been going on for a little over 10 years, women are finally starting to be educated and wake up and say, we need to do this. But it took the men agreeing with that. It also took the men, to Jenna and Detaz's points, that, you know, we can't just keep perpetuating the cycles, throwing them in jail and making things worse. You know, it took men believing that women needed more power, more rights in Saudi Arabia to speak out, because the worst men in Saudi Arabia, they're not going to listen to a woman saying we deserve to drive. They're going to listen to other men that make the argument. And so we also need men standing yeah. up for what's right yeah, against the absolutely. Perpetrators.
Stop there. That's perfect. Now, we need you just said something again. We need men coming out and supporting other men to right. That's great, Jennifer. I like mm-hmm. that. I mean, because at least we're not blaming it all on one gender versus the other, because men have a role, big role of responsibility in this. I'm not talking about the perpetrators, obviously. We know that they're pigs. That's beside the point. But I'm talking about good, decent men to step up and say that's not acceptable. And you know what else? It really comes down to, I'm thinking about as a father myself, Jenna, and my daughter. I have no tolerance for this mm-hmm. sort of nonsense on any level of whatsoever. Course. None. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. you don't want to deal with me as a madman, I'll tell you, if something has happened to that degree, because I'm going to be the biggest asshole you've ever met in your life. You understand, Miss Jenna mm-hmm. Smith?
Oh, yeah. Well, and see, that's the thing. That's in your own little pocket of reality. That's your prerogative to behave how you want to behave. But the thing is, when we are looking at there's more going on, where there's some, you know, the hurt people saying, mm-hmm. there's something mm-hmm. going on within them. And I deal with wealthy clients sometimes, and they have it all, and they have checked all the check boxes, and who are you to feel depressed, and who are you to feel badly? And they're really not allowed. So there is this flip side of what's going on underneath them to feel that they could hurt somebody to that level that, you know, I believe Taz, you were sharing, they were trying to get to that point. Like, it isn't about villainizing. We really do need to elevate and get to that point of, it's not going to happen right away. You do need healthy men to speak the language of men to get the point yeah. across. And there's going to be a series of layers of all of this, of getting those people, because you can't just go to somebody who's a rapist and say, hey, you know, you shouldn't do that. I mean, their reality
bad man,
is
stop it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no, you actually do. You normally have to be animalistic and probably violent to stop some behaviors, because that's what they know. But that's not what we want. You know, it's just, again, perpetuating violence, perpetuating disempowerment. And
so,
you know,
Jenna, is somebody like that transformable? I mean, I keep hearing you. I appreciate the line you're on, but you got to tell me. I mean, these people need help, you're saying. Okay, let's help them. I get that. But can they be transformed?
You know, that's a very general thing to say, but I think if they want to.
If they want to.
If they, you know, because there are, as I said, consciousness levels where the animalistic way of existing, I'm going to take that from you. I'm going to abuse you because it gives me pleasure. That level of power is going to act that way. So do I believe everybody can? I did in my 20s. Now I don't. I do feel some people just have darkened and their soul is
a little
so
cynical,
far from
Jenna
their
Smith.
Humanity. I don't know, realistic, cynical. I would love to think that they would want that level, but I just don't think they believe it within themselves. So they're just going to do what they're going to do. For the most part, but there is the ability to start healing the conversation and do what we're doing right here and giving permission for people to think differently about things and educate people.
Well, all right, you have two things here. As we peel this conversation a little bit more, you have the victim and you have the perpetrator. You have the abuser, you know, the abuser, yeah? And you have the victims. Yeah. You've got two.
And you have the witness.
And what?
Usually, yeah. Some people, you have the witness, so you have a triangle, because you're seeing there are usually people enabling, unfortunately, that are witnessing as well.
Well, which is kind of, I guess, what you were saying earlier, Taz, like, where the hell were all these people?
Yeah.
I mean, where were they when the crime was going on, right? I mean, what, you know. So, but what I'm wondering is, so Taz, I want to talk to you a moment seriously. And in your life, you had this happen to you personally, which you've shared very brief. It was on a different topic we were talking about the other day, but I knew I wanted to circle back around it because this is a tool that we can help educate folks yourself with what you've gone through. And I know you are so, like me, very authentic and outspoken, and you understand that. So tell me, when it was happening to you, when you were at that point, maybe share a couple of thoughts with us as to, from being a victim in this role, Taz, what was on your mind? What were you going through? And you know, could you see the light at the end of the tunnel? What gave you the courage to make that change in life, Taz? That's kind of what I want to know. And I want you to answer that question just on the other side of this quick pause. I'd like you to meet Lieutenant Randy Sutton, law enforcement veteran, author, podcast, and talk radio host of Blue Lives Radio on America Out Loud. Randy, whether it be a public event turned tragic or natural disaster, law enforcement is steadfast when it comes to public safety, even in spite of media criticisms. Why?
Because the men and women of law enforcement are dedicated to what they do. It's about service. It's about community.
Lieutenant Sutton, America Out Loud has a spotlight on law enforcement and our military. How has this impacted you in getting your message out on Blue Lives Radio?
Oh, it's been a life-changing experience, Malcolm. I mean, the opportunity to tell the truth, as we call it, the out loud truth, has been a life-changing opportunity for me. You know, as my role changed from being an active duty police officer to being an advocate for law enforcement, America Out Loud has provided a forum for that. And it's touched literally hundreds of thousands of lives, and it has deep meaning to them. It brings them the truth about law enforcement, and it helps to bridge some of those gaps that are taking place within our culture.
Our goal is simple: to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. It's to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications.
Hey there, I'm Taz Thornton. You're with Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, Season 2. I'm with Jennifer Breeden, Jenna Smith, and of course, Malcolm Out Loud. And today, we're discussing a really quite a tricky topic for some. We've been talking about sexual harassment, abuse, and all the stuff that's been in the news of late. And just before we broke, Malcolm was asking me to talk about some of my own experiences of abuse and how I recognised what was going on and how I turned things around. Well, for me, it took quite a lot. You see, I was in a domestic abuse relationship. And one of the points I think people miss when it's ongoing abuse is I didn't realise exactly what was going on because I had been drummed down so gradually that I didn't realize how much of myself I had lost. I had lost so much of my identity through this process that I'd lost sense of what was normal, what was real. Was this really out of the ballpark or was I being frigid? There's all kinds of stuff going on and I had no benchmark. Now, I think the other important thing to bring around is the kind of abuse I was going through wasn't your kind of stereotypical guy punching a girl. Yeah, it was a guy, but the kind of abuse was in that grey area. We talk about things like gaslighting far more now. But at the time, I didn't know where to go with it. You know, we're taught from a very young age, aren't we, that if somebody hits us, we get out. But when it's sexual abuse, when it's emotional abuse, when it's psychological abuse, the lines are blurrier. And for me, in order to get to the point where I turned things around, I got to a really, really dark place. I got to a point where I was praying for a terminal illness.
Wow.
And my goodness, yeah, I've done so much work energetically to undo that, to redress that balance. I'd considered suicide. I didn't want to leave that mess for my loved ones. Mm. And in the end, I struck this crazy deal with whoever was listening that I would go out every day and take as many risks as I could. And if I was alive at the end of the day, someone wanted me to be here. And ultimately,
wow.
Yeah, it took me crashing my car. I broke my back in three places. And I remember, three places. And I remember lying on a flatbed in a hospital with my head packed in sandbags. And I lay there for 9 hours with nobody really telling me what was going on until I heard the word spinal damage. And this might sound really cliched, guys, but it was in that moment that I went from hopeless to hopeful. Something switched for me in that moment. And I went from thinking that I had no life to, hold on a minute, Taz, if all this stuff has happened to you, there are going to be other people out there in a similar state of feeling trapped. What if? What if you could get out there and help other people?
Right.
What if you can use it to do some good? And that's what it took.
Well, that's why now, Tez, everybody wants to be around you now, you see. I mean, you're like you're a celebritar.
And
everybody wants to be around you because you're inspirational. That's why you're such a great speaker and author and just a beautiful person. And sometimes we go through, well, I just know that about you. It was instant for me. I knew I would love you the first time I spoke to you. I mean, I just automatically knew that. How can you not love Taz Thornton? And how would the world be without Taz Thornton? It doesn't exist.
Oh, Malcolm, I've got something in my eye. Stop it.
Well, but that's what you bring to the game of life. But you see, now you explain it so well. And as a victim yourself and going through that, I guess what I hear a lot of, Taz, is that people blame themselves. And was you at that point where you blamed yourself?
Oh, goodness. I think we all go through that. I think that's a natural part of the progression.
Okay.
One thing I will say, and it's offered a slight tangent, is when I now sometimes work with people, and I'm saying people because, of course, it's not just women who have been through abuse of some kind, whether it's in a romantic relationship, whether it's from members of the family, whether it's from adults abusing them as children. I now work with a lot of people who've been through similar points. And one of the areas I'm really keen to work on with them is to get out of this area where we call ourselves victims. Because all the time we call ourselves either a victim or a survivor, we are holding ourselves in the energy of what happened. Now, that's not to dismiss it. It's not to say that it didn't happen at all. But we need, once we move through that situation, and the people we're talking about today who are still just coming out and just saying, hey, this happened to me, they're not there yet. But once we've moved through that and gone through the healing process, I think we need to get to a point where we can recognize that it's happened.
Well, it's funny when you were talking, I love that, Taz, that's such a powerful story, and I love that. And one of the things that you said that I that really resonated with me was when you were talking about hopeless, going from hopeless to hopeful, because I think hope is so powerful. And sometimes in movies, I'll watch these movies and I'll get a really profound quote from a movie, no matter who it's said by, and I'll hold on to that. And in Hunger Games, I forget which Hunger Games movie it is, but there's a scene where like the heroine, Katniss, is talking to President Snow, you know, the bad guy, and he's explaining why he does these Hunger Games things. And he says, and why he's afraid of her. And he says to her, you know, fear is what, you know, props up my dictatorship. He goes, but the only thing stronger than fear is hope. And I think there's a lot of truth to that in general. But I love
absolutely
it.
Agree.
Jenna, you hear Taz's story, Jenna, and take it forward for me as a professional yourself and what you hear her say. And, you know, we talk a lot. I like what she's saying about the victim. It happened. It happened. And so we have to deal with it. We have to come to reality that it happened. And I guess you would probably say, Jenna, that the first part of your healing is that you admit it's happened, right? I mean, you can't fix it if you don't know it happened. Didn't happen.
Yeah. And you see, and you get help. And in her case, it was sort of one of those bottoming out. And thanks for sharing, Taz, because, we all know how much courage that takes. And I love that you're talking about moving on, because it isn't a badge of honor. So yes, admitting it, coming to terms with it, going through the healing process, knowing that you don't know how to do it, gentleness and compassion are huge for a victim experience. Moving through things like anger and rage, or, you know, there's a there's an arc. And then you come out the other side. When I cut my arm, I let it heal, and it's a scar. It doesn't define me. You know, people, oh, what's that scar? Oh, it's a scar, you know, but that's my arm, and I'm me. I'm okay. I'm going to do now. I'm going to be here now and do what life is moving through me to do, because I'm not in an abusive situation anymore, you know? So that would be what I have to say about that. The healing process takes time. it's nature heals you. You know, there is a process that's working on your behalf when you start to align and reconnect to your, you know, Taz, what I was hearing is your ability to be here. It was like, you were so broken down that your right to live and thrive was taken away. That's, to me, more tragic, because that's life being taken away. Even if it's not death, but there was the spirit was taken away. So there's a healing process that everyone's going to need to go through, and that, again, society needs education about, because it's not like, oh, it's over, get over it, what's your problem? Like, yeah, that type of attitude is also very, very relevant.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no getting over it, but there is eventually a time to move on for the betterment of your own life.
It doesn't mean you should never mention it. It just means,
yeah,
it's, you know, stop putting it on a t-shirt.
You're right.
Can I ask Carolyn, a question related to... Oh,
yeah.
Keep going.
I was just going to say, Carolyn Mace calls it woundology. It's like, it's a woundology. It's something, if you guys want to look into that. Carolyn Mace is an author, and she calls it woundology, and she has a great YouTube talk about that. So there we go.
I wanted to ask, related to what Jenna was saying, and related certainly to Taz's story, and seeing now how much good, Taz, you can do in the world, and how inspirational you are, and how you can talk about your story. And this is what happened. It, like Jenna was saying, it doesn't define who you are, but it's mm-hmm. in some ways has helped make who you are even more powerful, more inspirational. And one of the things that I've thought a lot about in my life, because I think most of us have a past in some sort, but is shame, and how debilitating shame is. Mm-hmm. And Jenna, is that something you were saying with, like, learning to not be defined by your wounds? Because I think shame, I think shame really just takes so many women, so many people, just it beats us down, and it keeps us from doing anything until we learn to say, this is not who I am. This is does not define me. I can talk about this, and I don't have to be debilitated into shame.
And the shame, shame thing is that I matter. You know, shame is the feeling that you are wrong. Guilt is the feeling you've done something wrong. So the perpetrator is going to feel the guilt, hopefully. And then the ones that don't feel it, those are the narcissists, right? And that's an actual psychological thing. But the shame, yes, absolutely. And that's why, you know, Brené Brown and the power of vulnerability and these conversations are all rising up. Our conversations are rising up. And shame is so debilitating. It's the feeling that you don't deserve to be here. It's so debilitating. Being able to have space to speak is one of the first most healing things, to have space to just be heard, that this is what's happening for me.
Well, listen,
instead of it going within.
The fact that we know that this is such a deeply rooted societal problem, I mean, the fact that we now know that, I mean, the cat's out of the bag. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, so let's pick that up right now. And what I want to ask is this. If we were to pause the clock, and I wonder what we learned from this, all of us, society. And if we come back 50 years from now, I say 50 years, could be 30 years. But let's say we come back again. Have we learned anything from this, Jenna? Let's start with you first, as you were just talking about it. And because you keep saying, well, fix the problem, fix the problem. We know it's a deep-rooted societal problem. We got the power shift. We know they're after power. They want to, some of them are more, you know, more angry or hurtful or violent than others. But it really does come back to the power. As Taz said, it's not the sex specifically. But talk to me, as far as the society, we talk about the kids, as Jennifer was saying, what do we learn by this? What happens 30 years from now? Have we fixed any of this, if you put your crystal ball on? Jenna, are we still looking at the same problem?
I feel like it takes about 4 or 5 generations to make a significant change in society, because you've got the people that are so deep-seated in their thinking, and they're just not going to budge. And then you've got these new, fresh minds coming in that are like, hey, wait a second, that's not okay. You know, even the millennials going, it's not okay to work 80 hours and have no life. That's not okay with me. And then things start to change. So that does take time. But I do feel that, you know, the solution that we're looking at, that elevating humanity, is to reconnect that we all deserve to be here. The racial issues, the violence is all, I deserve to be here and you don't. On some level, that level of violence of me over you, power over the other. That's what we need to start looking at. It's like, we all deserve to be here.
Well said.
And we all deserve to live in harmony. And so for me, my work is connecting people back to that true nature. And
wow.
I think that's that's it.
Jenna, that's well said. Now I see why they call you a human being expert. My golly. I mean, that's well said, because you just kind of put the whole iceberg on it, too, for like even a lot of these other problems out there that we're talking about, like racism and or just the disparity that is out into the public sphere. Let's pick that up. Taz, let's have you answer that same thing, because that's... we're dealing with this as a societal problem. Now, Jenna says maybe four or five generations, we can learn some stuff. And there is definitely a cultural shift going on. When she talked about the millennials, there's a definitely cultural shift going on. It happened with my mom and my grandmom, who were at home moms working with families. That no longer is the priority today. It's all sort of changed.
Yeah,
we're seeing things change. As we said the other day in a show, the Leave It to Beaver days and the cleaver, it's long gone. It's never coming back. But let's take this problem now. What do we look like 30, 40, 50 years from now, Taz? Does society learn anything from this with all this coming out now, or is the same problem again?
Well, you know, one of the guys I worked with most extensively when I was learning about shamanism, and I went on that learning curve for about a decade or so, and again, that's still very close to my heart. I always remember him saying that anybody can be a two-legged, but to be a human being is a high, high art. You know, I think we're always going to have two-leggeds, and my hope is that we get more people striving to be human beings.
Jennifer, what do you think? Do we have hope?
Yes, we do. I think the more even I hear stories like Kaz's story and other people's stories where you come up, you rise up, and you truly make a difference. You know, I think there's always hope, and I think, you know, like Jenna was saying, that of course it's going to be generational shifts, things like that, but we do have people that are rising up with this rise now in social media, people that might not have a cent to their name, being able to have a voice, being able to speak out, being able to tell their truth, and really learning to lessen that shame hold over us. And from the perpetrator standpoint, to have people, like we were talking about earlier, the men that that know it's wrong to speak out and say, you know, this is what's right, this is what's okay to do, this is human. Humanity. This is being a human being. This is equality. And to let the voices, I mean, I believe it was Edmund Burke that said, the only time evil can triumph is when good men or good people remain silent. And so the more we keep speaking truth, I think the more we're going to retrain and reframe societal minds to teach our children to grow up, to think differently, and to start actually shaming the behaviors that need to be shamed, and lifting up those who need to be lifted up.
Well said, well said. Now you know why at the top of America Out Loud we have the words, "Let the silent voices be heard." What we're talking about here, Jennifer, it's what you're chiming in on right there, exactly. So you are all absolutely extraordinary. What I love about this show, what I love about this season, is the each one of these women, I call them extraordinary. Now you see why, my friends, I call them extraordinary, because you just see the extraordinariness of each one of these people. And each one brings something to the dance of life. And that's why I thought the connectivity of all of this on this show, life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure, would be an incredible journey. Well, it is my pleasure, friends, to have you with us today. Thanks for being part of this journey. Jennifer Breeden, Jenna Smith, and Taz Thornton. This is Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued, friends.